You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As the coronavirus continues to claim lives here in Illinois and across the country, newsrooms have expanded obituary desks in an effort to document and celebrate life during this global pandemic. A few weeks ago, the Chicago Tribune had four reporters and a single editor working on obituaries. Now that number is closer to 20. Sophie Sherry has been writing obituaries for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us now via Zoom for more. Sophie, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I understand you actually started as an intern and you've stayed on to help write obituaries. What has the past couple of months been like for you and your team?
Yeah, so I started as an intern at the Chicago Tribune this January. And that internship was supposed to end in April, but I have hung around to assist with COVID-19 coverage and largely assist with these obituaries. So when the state was nearing the stay-at-home order, the newsroom sort of divided up into COVID-19 related teams, pulling reporters from every corner. So we have sports reporters, features reporters, business reporters, all aiding in this effort. And as you said, the obituary team was just one of those teams that began with about five people and one editor. And as the number of deaths has continued to grow, that team has grown as well. So now we have close to 20 reporters who are taking on these tasks each week. I've sort of been with the effort for a couple of weeks now, close to a month probably. And I think looking at my own personal spreadsheet, there's about 50 individuals that I'm personally sort of efforting, trying to reach out to, or in the midst of writing myself.
Wow.
So that's kind of what things have looked like for me so far.
And I've noticed in some of the bylines on these stories, these obituaries, and some of them are sort of capsules, a little mm-hmm. shorter or briefs, I guess they're called in the newspaper industry. but I've seen the names of like Chris Jones, the theater critic. I mean, this is kind of mm-hmm. an all hands on deck effort, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, one of the first obit reporters, I think, was our college basketball and football reporter, was one of the first to immediately chip in with the effort. So yeah, it's really been pulling from all corners of the newsroom. And a lot of those reporters, like the theater critic you mentioned, are doing this work on top of their traditional beats and staying on top of that coverage as well.
Hmm. So let's talk a little bit about how this process works. I understand you get mm-hmm. information from the medical examiner every day. What happens after that?
Yeah, so we get sort of the different names of those lives lost to COVID-19 sent to us from the medical examiner's office every day. And then our editor in charge of the obit team, Jeff Cohen, as well as the reporter who's sort of been taking the lead on this, Christy Grotowski, they take those names that were given from medical examiners and basically just assign those out each every other day. The reporters on the obit teams, or every 2 days or so, we get sent a spreadsheet where we're basically assigned eight new families, eight new individuals to reach out to. So we're probably a couple days behind the actual those names coming in from medical examiner's office, but we get those names and then immediately start trying to find family members to reach out to. So when I get sent that spreadsheet every other day, I then sort of do an initial Google search to try to see if there's been any other coverage of that individual, especially with stories about police officers, fire, first responders. A lot of times those will be publicized already and we'll have a point of contact. And other times I just turn to social media and I'm searching names, trying to find family members, and then reaching out to those individuals. And we try to do that as soon as possible, and obviously give that family member as much time as they need to decide if they want to speak with us and participate in this. And so after that, I interview that family member over the phone. You know, unfortunately, we can't meet face to face like this. And unfortunately, given the circumstances, a lot of the family members I speak to are currently themselves quarantining just because they or their family member have recently been around an individual mm-hmm. who had the virus. So speaking to those family members and then working to write up some sort of life story. And I always tell them when I'm reaching out, you know, we don't want to focus on how this individual died, but sit down and talk about how they lived. And that's sort of the focus of these stories for us. So yeah, I obviously try to do as many interviews as I can in a given day or week, even though it can be incredibly challenging. And each one of these interviews hits hard, and I hang up the phone every time thinking, this can't possibly get any worse. And then you hear a story that's just even more haunting than the first. But yeah, we work to get those up on our website on the page dedicated to these stories as soon as possible. And then we're also working to get every single one of those in print as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're speaking with Sophie Sherry, who's working on the obituary team at the Chicago Tribune, trying to document some of the lives that have been lost to the coronavirus here in Illinois in the last couple of months. Do you find that you have to sort of sell this idea to families? Are most people receptive to it, or do you have to do some convincing?
I think for the most part, a lot of families are willing once they understand that, you know, we're not reaching out to get the details of, we don't need all the details of what happened in the hospital, what happened with this diagnosis. You know, we really want to focus on telling the story of their lives, the things they cared about, their family. And I think once families understand that it's going to be about that, that we're not going to be asking them to necessarily rehash the trauma of the past week. And instead, hopefully this can be some sort of healing, a means of healing almost, a chance to kind of talk about the life that individual lived before this virus. I've found that a lot of people are really receptive. And obviously we've run into family members who, you know, aren't ready to talk about this yet. There's certain families that don't necessarily want it publicized that their relative died from this virus and therefore don't want to participate. And others who just, again, are still coming to terms with how they would want to share this story. But I think for the most part, people have been pretty receptive to the idea. And even though conversations begin pretty difficult at times, when I initially pick up the phone at the end, I think a lot of family members feel happy and feel better that they had the chance to, you know, share a little bit about that individual with someone else. So yeah, I mean, again, all the conversations start out a little challenging, but end always kind of on a positive note as they're given a chance to reflect and kind of share with me the lives of their family member.
Yeah. So you mentioned you've done dozens of these mm-hmm. stories at this point. Mm-hmm. Which ones stick out to you? Can you share a couple of those stories that have stuck with you?
Yeah. So, one of the stories I worked on was speaking with the now widow of a young 32-year-old man, and they had a 4-year-old child together. And I think those stories, those interviews are obviously really hard to conduct because, I mean, every story is tragic, but especially with someone as young as 30, you know, she didn't really see this coming. Everything she heard up to this point was that younger individuals would kind of overcome this. And so, I mean, yeah, you just kind of leave those interviews sort of awestruck. It doesn't really make sense to you, you know, why this young man. That particular story of the widow I spoke to, who will now be a single mother to their 4-year-old child, that her husband entered the hospital and it seemed that he was on the road to recovery. And then one morning she got a call from doctors that while they were repositioning him, his ventilator fell out and he began to crash and ultimately did not ever come back. And so things like that, you just obviously don't make sense. And it's, especially with these younger stories, a lot of instances where it seems like things are getting better and then suddenly they're not. And those have been really challenging to report on. And I think, on top of the young people, some of the other really difficult stories, and I know Christy Gertowski has done a lot of these, as well as other reporters, are the stories of those frontline medical workers that we've lost. I think in the state, as of last week, there were at least 25 medical professionals who had passed due to COVID-19 related causes. And Those are, I mean, these people are truly making the ultimate sacrifice, and it's really hard to hear those stories of nurses who are pulling extra shifts and ultimately contracting the virus. Or we published one story of a surgical tech who was just days away from retirement, and he contracted the virus and unfortunately didn't survive. So have been some of the ones that have stuck with me.
You know, we've only got about a minute left, and I wonder if you have, I mean, you've written so many obituaries. Are you seeing common threads? I mean, every life is different, obviously, but is there something that everybody's going through that's sort of the same?
Yeah. I mean, young or old, every single person I've spoken to has sort of left me with, I wish I could have been there, or I wish that my relative didn't have to die alone. I mean, due to the nature of this virus, there's so many restrictions on who can be in hospital rooms. And so basically everyone I've spoken to is struggling with the fact that their loved one, that they couldn't be there with them during their passing. And unfortunately, a lot of them as well are now forced to mourn alone. I mean, that widow that I just spoke of, she's been on quarantine since her husband's passing with their child, and you know, hasn't been able to be around family, hug family members, get assistance from those family members as you traditionally would after a loss. A lot of people haven't been able to have a funeral in the way that they would like, or are told if they're going to enter a funeral home, they all need to be 6 feet apart and wearing masks and can't hug one another while they're in that space. So I think the common thread I've seen is just, I mean, the real tragedy, and that people who haven't been personally impacted yet don't realize, is that these individuals are in the hospital room alone and without their family members up to those last moments.
Well, Sophie Sherry, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us and for doing the work you're doing. It's important work.
Thank you so much.
Sophie Sherry is a member of the obituary team at the Chicago Tribune. And that is all the time we have for the 21st today. Our program is produced by Libby Foster and Anna Casey, with technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Mackey. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.